Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching. We are going to talk about coaching today, specifically techniques that we can use that we get from coaching that our listeners can use in their everyday life. These are techniques that we often use when we're working with a client that also translate well in your everyday life. For example, perspective taking, shifting, that kind of thing. We'll talk in detail about those techniques and how you can apply them. You don't really need to have the coaching training to use these techniques. One thing that comes to mind is perspective. In positive intelligence, we have five areas that we look at, and we call them the superpowers of the sage. And we start with explore power, which is looking at perspectives. And we have this fable that is about four blind people who encounter an elephant. And the first blind person feels this elephant, never encountered it before, this animal, and says, wow, this animal is like a tree trunk because they're at the leg of the elephant. And the other blind person says, oh, you're wrong. This animal is more like a large leather wall. This person is at the side of the elephant. And the third blind person says, oh, you're both wrong. It's nothing like a wall and nothing like a tree. This is more like a snake because this blind person is at the elephant's trunk. And the fourth blind person says, oh, the three of you are completely out of your minds. This is more like a rope because the fourth blind person is at the elephant's tail. What I get from this fable is that people go into different situations and they have their knowledge of that situation. They have their knowledge of that situation, and it's easy to think what I know about this situation is all there is to know about the situation. It's not necessarily the case. In the case of these four blind people, if they had just maybe talked to each other, said, hey, you know, this feels like it might be a trunk, and the other one, no, this feels like it might be this, they might have a chance to kind of put the pieces together. That's where I go when I think about this fable, but other people might think something different. Erin, what do you think when you hear this fable?
I think we talked about this in a prior episode. Which episode was that? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
I can't remember either. I mean, for me, I just think of the power of coaching's ability to help someone perspective shift, and maybe even to not hold on to this idea of what right or wrong, but gain a deeper understanding into something. And I think that comes up a lot in the grief and loss coaching space that I live most of my life within. And that grief in itself is a big thing. It can be mysterious. It's hard to get to know. It's confusing. But once we have the space to look at that through various perspectives and by listening to ourselves really well, also, we gain deeper insight into who we are, what our wants and needs are, and then how that may be impacting our experience, how the external circumstances are impacting our understanding of ourselves and the world too. So that's where my mind started to head when I think of perspectives in general. And I see that as a clear coaching tool that can be used in a lot of ways. And we described it in different ways. You maybe in the form of a metaphor, which you so beautifully have the language to do often throughout various episodes, right? You, LaShawn, one of your coaching, I guess we're going to talk about superpowers later on, but one of your superpowers is that ability to relay the metaphorical space or the metaphorical imagery. So that's where my mind went as well. Anything else?
Well, I like the idea of looking at the grief process, like the one thing that you mentioned about that, and just seeing like the different aspects of it. And one thing that came up for me when I was listening to what you were saying is, if we were to apply this to everyday application, and I don't know if our listeners are aware that you offer consulting to companies, businesses, how to comfort, or how to, I would say, what would you say, companion someone in your company who's grieving, or how to support them Erin, you can give me better words because you're really good at that. That's your superpower. I would say your superpower as a coach is offering terms and words and clarifying what's happening through models and through definitions. I think that's your superpower as an observation that I have made in the years that I've known you. I would like to bring that to the discussion is how would you consult an individual who is encountering or who has people in their lives who are going through the grieving process, or even a person who is working with someone who's going through the grieving process. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a loss of a loved one. It could be the loss of a project or an account or something. Understanding the things that you can go through when you lose something important to you or when something doesn't go the way that you want it to. What are some techniques or strategies people can use in those situations?
And you're talking about the people who are going through them versus the people who are supporting them?
Both.
Both. Okay. Yeah. So with the people going through those experience, I think of this Brené Brown quote where she says, "Courage is forged in pain, but not in all pain. Pain that is denied or ignored becomes fear or hate." Now, it's not always the case that it's, so strong fear or hate, but I appreciate her words so much. And so I think that's where I'd start from, that place of normalizing the experience with the individual. So this is a one coaching tip that you can use in your everyday life. Normalize that whatever hardship it may be that they're going through, that's okay, and it's okay to have hard things happen and those sorts of things. I think the other piece is to lean into those feelings, the complexity of thoughts and feelings that are going on. And that relates to her quote, as she coins it, courage, right? When we lean into that rather than push that aside, we expand our own vessel of strength, our capacity to take care of others, take care of ourselves, and live, more of an authentic life. That would be another kind of coaching concept to play around with. How do you help people do that have that expansion? And I think that takes time. And I think it takes, a lot of exploration, as you mentioned, is the first part of your type of coaching that you do, LaShawn. And moving with that exploration into some very scaffolded strategies so that we can relearn our world in a more hopeful way for ourselves. So if you're somebody helping someone going through these types of times and can be beside them in scaffolding those opportunities for them to try something new, maybe take these really small steps to doing something maybe a little bit different, that can also be supportive. And I think we talked about in our episode last week about also having that conversation with the person, using the language of the song, it's okay pretty much to not be okay. And we'll see this through together. And I think that's a third strategy in companioning somebody in your space. If you're not a grief and loss coach, right, just to sit there and say, we will do this together. We can get through this together. What do you need right now? Those sorts of things. So those come to mind for me. As a strengths coach, a positive intelligence coach, LaShawn, what else would you add here?
I love the piece that you added in about doing it together. We will get through this together. Also, the normalizing. And when I think of normalizing, I know what you mean by normalizing in terms of like this is okay that you're going through this. It's not an unusual thing, or it's not like you're broken or wrong, or you're doing it wrong. It's just this is what you're going through, and it's okay to do that. But one thing I think about with normalizing, and if you think of what's normal is something that's familiar, something that happens many times. And I'm shifting a little. I recognize that, but I do want to bring in the importance of routine and habit and making certain behaviors that serve you and that are healthy, making those behaviors a habit. And that speaks to positive intelligence, because positive intelligence and mental fitness training is all about making those behaviors that then set the foundation for a positive mindset, making those things a habit. And that's where my mind goes when especially when you mention like positive intelligence. And that's something that was a game changer for me. When in the past, when I have sought help, encouragement, wisdom, I've almost always looked at it in the past. I looked at it as a one-off. I'm going to read this book and it's going to answer all my questions and it's all going to be okay. And I'm going to go to this coach and I'm going to work with this coach and it's all going to work out and all my problems are going to go away. And then after the coaching, it's all just going to be a new, I'm going to reset. It's going to be new and everything's just going to work out simply because I did, you know, six sessions or I read this book or I went to this seminar or I watched this video. It's all going to work out. And it wasn't until I came across positive intelligence and mental fitness training, and also at the same time came across James Clear's Atomic Habits. And when it was so interesting, the synchronicities here, because I was getting into positive intelligence and mental fitness training, where it was becoming apparent to me, hey, this is not a one and done thing. It's not enough to have the awareness. I must also establish a habit that locks it in and makes it lasting and promotes longevity. When I was getting into positive intelligence for the first time, I came across, and I don't know how this happened by chance, or was it someone who recommended it to me at the same time, Atomic Habits by James Clear. And when I saw that, I was like, oh my goodness, this book, Atomic Habits and positive intelligence, finding them at the same time really helped me understand how important it was to establish a routine. And the book gave me the tools I needed to do that in the very same way that we do in positive intelligence with the ease and flow of the sage, where we take baby steps. And Erin, you say that a lot, baby steps. So, and I just think that is characteristic of coaching because we know change takes time, navigating change, getting used to change, reacclimating to change. That takes time and it takes baby steps. Having those two resources available to me at the same time really solidified and clarified the importance of habit when it comes to that powerful question that was asked in coaching. It reveals something. You get some insight. And then once you get that insight, it's really important to build on that and to do things in your life that are going to foster and support a change in behavior or mindset or thought process that's going to solidify that understanding or transform that understanding.
Yeah, I like that you bring in habits. And I think that there's so much more we as humans have to learn about how we internalize new habits and how we ensure that we're taking them on at the right cadence and timeline and keeping them small enough to make sure that we do or embody a new way of being and that sort of thing. And really thinking about not only the elements you talked about from James Clear's work and from positive intelligence coaching, but also the internal states of our own awareness and being attuned with what's really going on with ourselves. And I think that relates to habits a lot. And that's another coaching concept that people can use in everyday lives is just like, as you're starting to embark on trying to make a change and you want to try something new and to establish the habit, one piece is recognizing how bought in are you to this? You know, what's the likelihood that you're moving forward with this? And even just part of it to start with, right? Sometimes. So noticing those internal cues from ourselves, what our intuition is telling us, what our bodies are telling us, our emotional state and minds around it. And it doesn't have to be all perfected so that we start a new habit and we're all in this perfect space because that's not an option typically. But I think it's important to understand that so that it doesn't come up or get in the way when one's starting a new habit. Additionally, having an accountability partner is imperative when it comes to establishing new habits and can be done by accessing
that support through friends and family and through other support services. So realizing that we likely don't do this alone in a silo is another key piece to changing behaviors and our ways of being in the world. We see this, you know, in a lot of different industries. A lot of different people have coaches and counselors that support them in their own world of work and their own hobbies, business coaches, athletic coaches, that sort of thing. And one of the things that I say is it'd be nice if we all had just a coach. It'd be a little bit more of an equitable system to accessing that coaching support service, even have seen of its efficacy. That's what I'm thinking of when I think of accountability, partnerships, and coaching.
Yeah, I like what you said about having a support network. If we were to apply that to just everyday practical outside of coaching, I would say even if our listeners were to have like a list or something where they can like think about, you know, who are the people in my network? Everybody usually knows this, that I can turn to, not just when it gets to the point where it's too much for me, but just turn to on a regular basis, make it a habit to have to check in with your loved ones, to create a culture of interdependence, which we have talked about. We have talked about this, but I want to bring that back because it comes back to habits, routine, and having that support. And if we can create for ourselves a mindset of interdependence, a habit of interdependence, where we aren't siloed or siloing or making ourselves into silos, I think it's easy to do when we are preoccupied with the things that we need to do within our own like nuclear family. When we run in our mind that narrative that I can do it myself, oh, it's such a small thing, or I don't want to burden that person. I was having a conversation with one of my clients, one of my clients was talking about this. It's really interesting to me how, you know, her friends, the people that she turns to when she's in dire straits, basically when she's really desperate, she often talks about all of the things that they have going, like that person has a family, that person has work, that person. So you start to tell yourself that you shouldn't be a priority because you're listing, that is a habit of listing other things that come before you. And I'm not saying that, I'm not advocating that people should put themselves above other people or to not take into account that, hey, so-and-so on my list of people who is really supportive and someone I can turn to when in need is dealing with something really big right now. So I'm going to go to this other person. And I'm also going to check in to see how that person is doing. But not to stop yourself from reaching out to loved ones when you need someone else's perspective, or you need just a boost or a place to vent or a place where you can go where you're not judged. That's also, I think, really important. It's important to keep in mind that your needs are not better than or worse than others. They're equal. And if you can talk to the people that you love and say, hey, you know, I'm having a hard time now, or it would be really great if we could get coffee someday. I'm just feeling kind of isolated and I just want to reconnect. They can always say, oh, you know, I have this stuff happening. The important thing is to ask for what you need. And even if the person is unable to help you, you have at least asked for what you need, and you can then go on to another person or find another way to meet your needs. So meeting needs, I think, is really important as well. And it's something that in coaching we address, and in coaching we talk about values and other things to, you know, help our clients clarify, identify and clarify the things that are important to them. And to go back to what, Erin, what you were saying about normalizing that behavior, asking for what you need. And my observation has been that women and mothers especially tend to lose that ability to ask for what they need. I think part of it might be because societally, women are seen as the caregivers. They're seen as the ones that hold space. They're seen as the ones that are a stable, peaceful, calm place for their children. and for their families. So I think that there's that image of women's roles or what women should do. And so we tend to sacrifice our own needs for our children. We tend to sacrifice our own needs for our community. And we tend to sacrifice our own needs for our partners. And I think it's something to address. Erin, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, asking for what you need is hard. It's a hard skill to develop, and it's one that some people have more access to developing earlier on in their lifespan than others. So that is one of the challenges. As women, we are often not taught to ask and how to approach that concept just based off of societal norms, generally speaking. Not saying that's the case for everyone, but this idea of asking for what you need is a recognition too that you can have your needs as a caretaker and also be a caretaker and also kind of have that equilibrium where it's not your needs above somebody else's needs, somebody's needs above your needs. It's everybody's needs, right? And really being able to hold that spectrum of understanding in the greater picture of one circumstance. So if I were, you know, thinking about this concept in coaching and maybe thinking about how people can use this skill, I think it's practicing the skill and learning how to ask what one needs in an authentic way. And that can come from scenario-based coaching between an individual and a coach or a counselor, or by having those conversations with other people. But just by even talking about this conversation with someone else, that's a first step in you beginning to understand how you can ask for what you need. So moving into kind of separating needs, one thing that came up at a conference that I was at about 10 years ago, I mean, it's been a long time, but it was really trying to help college students understand differences between wants and needs. And I like that framing as a very simple concept because it's a good jumping off point to do a lot of different coaching activities around prioritizing people's wants and needs and seeing how they might have some conflict, for instance, or where there's synergy. So that's another coaching skill that can easily be applied to people's everyday life, is to look at their wants and needs as these separate lists and look at how they intersect. LaShawn, I'm going to bounce it back to you on this concept of needs and wants and see if there's anything else there before we move into any other part of the conversation.
As you were talking, I was thinking about working with a coach on these skills and how using these skills or applying these suggestions that we're talking about in this conversation is a good starting point. Even as we've been talking, you know, in this conversation, it keeps coming up how important it is to have a thought partner when you are embarking on the journey of self-awareness and establishing behaviors and habits that are going to serve you. And by that, I mean habits and thoughts that are nourishing to your mind and to your soul, where you are your own best friend, you're rooting for yourself, you're giving yourself grace, you're being gentle to yourself when you mess up, because we're human. That's just part of being human, is messing up. You're not beating yourself up. You're not saying, see, this is why no one loves you. You're not saying, see, this is why people can't stand to be around you. You're saying, oh, I messed up, and that's okay. Everybody messes up. It's a human thing. That's the normalizing of it, right? Doing that, being your own best friend, you can learn those skills with a thought partner, with a coach, and with a friend. You could talk to a friend and say, hey, you know, I really want to be nicer to myself. If you ever hear me say things like, oh, that was stupid, or if you ever hear me putting myself down. Can you just remind me, hey, don't you want to be nicer to yourself? A coach will do that. A coach will just do that anyway. That's kind of our job. We listen to you and we say, oh, you know, I heard you say this. How do you feel about that? Or what do you think about that? And our gentle questions are a way to get our clients to raise their awareness. When we're talking to ourselves, it's not easy to hear ourselves, especially if it's something we're used to doing. Having someone mirror back to you what you're saying, like for example, if I'm talking in a coaching conversation and my client says something like, I'm really feeling overwhelmed or something, and I say overwhelmed, then they can kind of hear that word back. And that could be something that kind of brings their awareness to that word. And then I might even stop the person and say, overwhelmed, where do you feel that in your body? Or how is that showing up in your life, when that overwhelm? Allowing the person to stop, pause, look at that word overwhelm, the feeling that goes with it, so that we can become more aware of what overwhelm feels like, so that when it does happen, we'd be like, oh, I'm overwhelmed. And then we could then move forward with some strategies to help navigate that, navigate overwhelm in a healthy way that's going to bring you to a place where you want to be. The more I, you know, we're having this conversation, the more I'm thinking, you know what? It's great to have these as a starting point, but a thought partner is so important. And coaches, that's what we are. We're thought partners. We're there with you, co-creating. We have certain knowledge and expertise of the process. Erin, you often talk about education, scaffolding, those things. We bring that with us. Having a thought partner is, I think, a really important piece to self-development, navigating change, navigating loss. What are your thoughts, Erin?
Yeah, I think the thought partner is significant in the what you had said about, you know, if you're just keeping these thoughts in your head or saying them to aloud to yourself, it's really hard to disrupt the thinking patterns that may not be working for you. And it's also hard to notice gaps and words that might be coming up as themes, as you mentioned, with the overwhelm. And as you were talking about overwhelm, just by bringing attention to that word, I started to get curious about it myself in terms of how it relates to my own life. And one kind of paradoxical question about it is like, when has overwhelm been helpful to me, or when has that served me? And really thinking about, there are some positive qualities and there are some negative qualities and neutral qualities of that word. And so without having a thought partner to break that down in a healthy and helpful way for the individual, that can be really hard to sit with, versus if I'm sitting with it by myself and thinking, I'm so overwhelmed. I can't really get out of that. I can't disrupt that. So that example and using that word really spoke to me in that sense. And then thinking about, you know, coaching in language in general, and that's another strategy to maybe find ways when you don't have a thought partner, you know, with you, or, you know, in the moment you're really grappling with something and it's maybe hurting yourself. You're not, you know, dealing with things very well due to circumstances and thought patterns that are just on rote, you know, thinking about, okay, what is this word here? What does it really mean? You know, how am I feeling it? Like you said, how are you feeling it internally? But also, you know, what are the qualities of the word that show up in your life in all the ways? Because we can sometimes get used to looking at something and only looking at it in a negative light. And we do that to ourselves. We are hard on ourselves and we treat ourselves poorly in a lot of ways. And I think that hopefully that's shifting some. culturally, but I don't know. And that's maybe a question I have, LaShawn. Like, do you think that, you know, with your clients that you see and just like, you know, being a mom and seeing your kids and their friends, like, is there this focus on well-being now that we better understand how to support ourselves by not beating ourselves up so much? Has that shifted?
Good question. I think yes and no. I think with social media, there's more of a temptation to compare yourself with others. And if you're constantly seeing pictures of a happy family, of a beautiful meal that someone prepared, when people are putting those things out there in social media, it creates this picture of this perfect life. And it's rare for people, although there is a trend for like showing messiness and the messiness of life. But for the most part, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, those are all showcasing what seems to be perfection. And it's easy, especially with young girls, to look at these images and feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not measuring up. I'm not measuring up. So that's the no part. The yes part is I'm noticing that the zeitgeist is changing, that people are starting to recognize the importance of mental health. They're recognizing the importance of taking care of not just their bodies, but also their minds. There are inspirational, motivational speeches, and I mean, those things get lots of views on YouTube. You can see like how many views there are on YouTube. Influencers are saying it more to their audiences. Hey, be good to yourself. Be good to each other. Love yourself. That's something that we hear a lot more than we did when I was growing up. And I think people are starting to embrace the idea of self-care. Although there is a little bit of a backlash, I'm noticing people are saying self-care is actually self-coddling. And that, you know, I think that's a nature of the beast. I think when we move a certain way in one direction, it's almost like inevitable that we'll start pulling the other direction. Like we kind of on a pendulum swing. And trends are very much like that. So I do believe that we are beginning to accept the idea of self-care, self-love. You're seeing it in songs more. You're seeing it with influencers. So yes, I do think that there is a shift. However, with social media and the way that people are still valuing perfection over vulnerability, I do think that there is a tendency, a trend for us to value people who show up in a polished way. We're less inclined to trust someone who is messy or someone who is not, you know, that professional polished look. And so there is I think there is a kind of tendency to value that, but I do see that kind of changing little by little. It's encouraging to see, and I'd like to see more of it. I do think that it is reflecting more in spaces where it's more spiritual or, of course, the self-help spaces. But if you veer into political spaces or business spaces or like that kind of thing, you're seeing more of, you got to be polished. You got to be on top of your game. You got to be almost perfect. You got to be an expert. And there's that tendency outside of the softer spaces in social media that it hasn't quite gotten there. Although Simon Sinek, I mean, he is a prime example. You mentioned Brené Brown. She's a prime example of people who are bringing that softness, that vulnerability, and touting it as a strength to corporate world and encouraging corporations, CEOs to be soft, to be human, to be understanding, to give people a mental health day, to get to know the people you work with, to build teams, to tell stories. That's really starting to get traction. That's encouraging to see. there's the whole heart-centered leading, looking at leadership as asking for needs and meeting needs and that kind of thing. So I do see a little bit of a leaning towards kinder, gentler, you know, spaces, but it's coming, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that you mentioned that people think self-care is coddling. And I think it's interesting because self-care is such a broad term that some people may overuse it in certain ways where it's not promoting health. And in fact, it's declining their health in certain ways. And then other people may view it as something that they don't have access to or don't know how to embark on self-care. And so I feel like we could talk about that topic of self-care as a whole episode maybe in the future, because, you know, what is it? What is healthy, effective self-care for each individual? And, you know, that piece comes up in coaching questions a lot too, not always directly, like, but more in terms of just the concept of care and how are you caring for yourself and those sorts of things. So I like that you brought up that piece. That word is very fierce. I don't know, like coddling. It's a word that evokes a lot of emotion, right? Like, wait, you're saying I'm coddling myself because I'm taking care of my health? Like what? But I can see how the self-care industry gets that rap and how we get that rap by overindulging or doing certain things that, you know, may relate a little bit more to that word. But overwhelmingly, I see the benefit of these types of care practices implemented both within industry and, you know, at the personal level too. And I like how you went into both the social media aspects of, you know, the polished look of business and politics, and then also the other influencer looks of, you know, be more soft and kind and those sorts of things. And it'd be really cool to keep moving toward this space of how these meld together and how we create, you know, more opportunities within spaces that maybe don't have as many healthful practices that could possibly benefit from that. And that might be a coaching tip for the general public too, thinking about their own health and how that shows up in the workplace for themselves. And if they don't have good workplace policies, you know, really using that thought partner, as you use those words, you know, using that person to find a good pathway forward that, you know, helps the individual be able to have good health in the workplace and care for themselves when those policies may not exist. And then there are, you know, a lot of organizations where employees are working toward crafting those policies and improving those policies, which it typically improves everything, including productivity and output as well. So yeah, I don't know. I just feel like self-care, I have more to say, I think, but I don't at this moment. Yeah. So I guess kind of circling in, are we kind of at that point for a coaching nugget of wisdom? And I know throughout this episode, we've dropped them throughout, which has been really cool. So if you listen to the episode in its entirety, you'll get quite a few nuggets of how you can apply coaching skills into your daily life and into your world of work and into your personal lives. And so I will say the coaching nugget of wisdom is a call to action on my part. I challenge and encourage anyone who is listening to really delve into these self-development topics with a person that they trust, including a professional such as a coach or a counselor, but also a friend or a partner, and really try to find a way through using the coaching techniques in this podcast through some of those challenges and problems you may be facing to create better outcomes for yourself.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Erin, for my coaching nugget of wisdom would be a call to action to encourage our listeners to choose one of the nuggets of wisdom that we have included in this conversation. And some of which we intended as a negative wisdom, others of which might have spoken specifically to you. So if there's anything that we've mentioned, anything we've talked about that you were like, wow, you know, wow, that's exactly where I am right now, I really want to encourage you to take a moment, pause, jot down those things that we say around that topic, maybe do a little research or even have a conversation with a friend that or a loved one, someone you trust. It could be a friend, it could be a coach or a counselor, and get started with the investigation or discovery of that, finding out what it was about that. Maybe you already know it's crystal clear, or it might just be a little bit of a physical response to something we said, or a just a moment of hesitation or where you pause or you like maybe stop the recording or whatever. That means there's something you need to know. That's something that's could be of use to you. So I would encourage you to take the time to choose one of them that resonates with you to kind of explore and see where it takes you. Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.